You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Well, Chip, this is a real special treat today.
Yes, it is.
It's always fun when we have people we know and love on a podcast with us.
Look at that smiling face. I mean, this we're not recording it for the internet to be seen, but we get to see that smiling face.
Well, we'll spoil the mystery for everyone. Fancy Haygood is here with us today. Hi, Fancy.
Hey, y'all.
Hi.
So for those of you who don't know, Fancy is an amazing singer-songwriter in Nashville that Chip and I have had the pleasure of knowing for many years now. And we were just talking about our theme for the month of August is really about refocusing and just making sure that you're actually in alignment with who you are. You're not abandoning yourself for any parts of your life. And I was telling Fancy before that immediately when Chip and I started talking about a guest, I was like, do you think Fancy would come on? Because your story is just so in line with this topic to me. Do you feel
it
that?
Was so funny because I like when we started talking about people, I was like, Fancy would be so perfect for this if we did a music person.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I'm glad that if y'all are talking about alignment that you think of me, because most of the time I don't know that I'm aligned with anything. I don't always feel in alignment, but if that's what the vibe I'm giving, then you know what? I guess that's the goal.
I think it is the vibe you're giving. And I think I love that you just said that actually, because that's what it feels like, right? Like that sort of feels like adulting life in general to me is like when people are like, you just seem so chill and like you have it all together. I'm like, is that what I'm giving off? Because that is absolutely not what's happening.
That's not what's going on.
I say all the time is you're so confident. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, spend about 5 minutes in my head and you'll find out.
100%.
I mean, maybe that's just the problem about being human, you know? It's like, we all suffer from that same shit, you know? It's...
Sure.
Yeah.
Perception and reality are always such a, you know, different thing. And these days, you don't really get to know people because we're constantly learning about people via what they're presenting online or what they're presenting on stage and stuff like that. So you don't really know the real unless you're in the thick of it with these people in their day-to-day life. But you know what? I think a lot of the time it's about faking it till you make it. And, and I'm about my, you know, career stuff. I think it's about anything. And if you want to feel confident and be confident, I think faking confidence would be the best way to get there.
Yeah. You start living it and then maybe it happens and starts to line up.
Well,
yeah.
the universe is always listening, you know, and it gives you what you ask for and what you put out. And you know, it's funny because that actress from Euphoria, Sydney Sweeney, was reading an interview with her the other day, and she was talking about like people think that I'm so rich and I'm all set. Now she's like, yeah, I'm doing okay, but I can't take years off like someone who's as established as like a Gwyneth Paltrow. She's like, I am constantly like looking for the next job. I'm paraphrasing too what she said, but she's like, I'm constantly looking for the next thing so I can keep what I have going because I'm just not there yet. But like, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you're looking like, I want that life. You know, she's everywhere. She's killing it. And she seems like she's killing it, but it's, you know, the perception is not always the reality.
You know, what's been interesting for me the last couple years in my life is, you know, living in Nashville and being close to people who are, you know, who all do what I do, and at all different stages of people's career. I'm close to a lot of people who are headlining arenas, and I'm close to people who can't get a publishing deal. I'm close to myself included. You know, my friend group has just a wide range of people at different stages of their career. And it's funny because when you're talking to all of them, it's funny, there's a running theme. We're always wanting more. We're always wanting, there's always something we're working towards. And sometimes no matter where you're at in your career or in your life, it just feels like, I mean, that's crazy to hear that actress, you know, she's in Euphoria, she's in The White Lotus. I mean, those are two of the biggest TV shows. And to hear she's still, you know, having to constantly work to keep it, that's like, oh my gosh, you think you're going to meet this moment and be at this moment, you know? But I think we're all constantly working. We're constantly striving to like find what is it, you know?
Completely. Go ahead, Chip.
Well, I just want, like, because I feel like this is really topical. I saw this thing on Instagram the other day that I forwarded to the artist that I work with. And it's just like a little inspirational thing. And it says, artists are not like athletes. We cannot win gold. We cannot beat other creatives. We cannot come in first. Sport is objective. Our craft is subjective. Creating to be the best is a waste of energy. Instead, create to connect with the people who need you, because they're out there. Create in your way, because there is no right way. Take the pressure off and focus on your new unique brand of magic.
Damn, that's good.
It's so good. But it's like, you know, to Fancy's point, it's like, how do we all end up on this like hamster wheel where like it's never enough, you know?
Completely. And Fancy, you mentioned like the friends you have that are, you know, selling out arenas and stuff right now. And it's like, they're still chasing though. You know, like if we set these mile markers as these things that once we get there, then we'll be complete. It's like, we're, like you said, we're never going to be satisfied because there's always something else. And so that kind of actually brings me back to the topic, because I think the most important thing most of us can do, or all of us, is live in the present moment and really like be true to yourself and ask yourself like what that quote just said about what are you bringing to the world and like who are you helping and what are you giving back and are you satisfied with this? Is this in alignment? So I want to kind of go back to your story, because the way you started and then where you are now feel to me like there's been so much growth and so much progress. And in that terms of like just being in alignment. So let's go back to just even your childhood. When did you really start to fall in love with music?
You know, as a child, I was really quiet. I was shy. I had two older sisters, and I never really had to speak because I was constantly being spoken for.
Yeah.
Dad or my sisters, but music was always something that I just gravitated towards, even when I was like really little. And my mom would tell you from some of the first stuff I murmured, you know, I wasn't very social until I was like, I mean, maybe like 10 11, like wow. I was quiet, but music was always how I communicated. It's just kind of what always excited me. It's always what made me kind of present in moments. And even when I was younger, when people would ask like, what do you want to be when you grow up, even without any sort of context, I just knew I wanted to be a singer. It's just kind of like, it's weird to think about, because that's just always been in my head. Like, I remember knowing that's what I was supposed to do from like thinking back to like me being little. So it's like, I don't know where that came from or what that was. It's just always what has really driven me and what has what spoke to me. But yeah, it's just kind of always been what I did.
I've always been so envious of people who just knew what they were supposed to do. Did you feel that way, Chip?
I can't remember, when I was in fifth grade, I told my best friend, I want to help rock stars be rock stars, but I don't know how.
You knew that?
I knew that. I mean, wow. I didn't even know what I was saying. Like, I don't even think I knew that rock stars had managers, you know? Yeah. Like, I just knew that I wanted to be involved in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I guess it helps when you're a really, really good singer. And so you're like, hey, I'm really good at this, so maybe this should be my job.
Well, you know, even like I'm talking like preschool, kindergarten. If someone asked me what I wanted to do, I'm like, I'm going to be a singer.
Wow. And
I don't be like a talent, like a great singer in pre-K, you know, at that point. But I think it's about drive. I think it's about learning. I've spent my whole entire life focused on this craft. And it's like, you know, it's paid off some days, and other days I'm like, should I be in insurance? Like, what's right. I work at Navy? Like, would I get out if I just worked at Old Navy?
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's what fulfills me, and it's what I feel the most myself when I'm, you know, creating, when I'm writing songs, when I'm performing, when I'm connecting with people through entertainment. That's where I feel the most myself.
Where did you first start singing? Were you a church singer? Is that, I think I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I grew up in church. I'm like if I was still religious, I would be like a fourth generation Nazarene.
Oh, wow.
So, I randomly still remember like my first solo in church and this like little Christmas pageant where I literally dressed like a little present. But I remember all of these moments, and it's just like I just felt, even back then, like it just felt so electric, like singing to an audience. And it's just, yeah, church is where I kind of got cut my teeth.
Yeah,
performing. Weird thing to say, but that's what it was.
Were you not, like you said that you were a shy, quiet kid, like was it where you finally felt a lot, like you weren't even nervous? It was, yeah, like you were nervous in real life but not on stage.
Truly, yeah, on any stage. And it's like funny to think of like church as like a performance, a place to like perform, but like I could not wait for the musicals that my mom would direct in church. And like I couldn't wait, because that's where I knew that I could just be 100% whatever I wanted to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so if you grew up in a church, and I know you grew up in the South as well. And so like, I imagine, did you know growing up, because you're a gay man, and like, did you know, were you identifying with that at a young age, or was that, when did that come into your life?
If I can, like, if I honestly like think about like my most private inner thoughts, yes, yeah. I knew, but I did not know what that was, you know, like I didn't know there was a name for it. I didn't identify as anything other than, you know, just being little baby Jake. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's always been a part of my identity. You know, it's like, I remember having crushes as far back as like being in preschool. I got in trouble in preschool one time for playing doctor with this kid named Christopher, and I was the doctor.
We'll use our imaginations there.
I hope you cured his ailment.
You need a checkup. It's definitely always been there. It's been, you know, I remember one of the first times feeling shame about that. And it's not, I didn't even like think about it as an identity or a sexuality. But I remember being in kindergarten, having my first yearbook, and my sisters and I were all sitting around our kitchen table, and they were circling all the boys they had crushes on in their yearbook. And I was doing the same thing. And I just remember being told, like, you don't circle the boys, you circle the girls.
Mm.
And I, in my head, I was like, that seems weird, but whatever, you know?
Yeah. I'll show you.
The first time I remember feeling like any amount of like embarrassment or shame of like, oh, I'm not supposed to be doing this is what I feel like doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So did that start to affect, like, I love that what you just said, to not be doing what I feel like doing, because it's like, we don't really come into this world knowing any different, right? And so then we're programmed with wherever we're from or whatever our family conditioning is to believe certain things. And this goes for everything, sexuality, politics, religion, like all the things. And it's like such a journey in each of our lives to really ask ourselves, I think, like, what is true for me? Like, what did I grow up believing? And then what is true for me? But having to let go of what we're taught is so difficult and complex and complicated. So like, was there a part of you that kind of shut down who, like, what you were feeling and maybe what you were identifying with because of what you were being taught?
You know, I think subconsciously I would have had to have been shutting down that part of me, just, but, you know, not understanding what that part of me was. Mm-hmm. I can't remember until I was like maybe in my early teens, feeling like, wow, I'm not, like, this is bad and I'm not allowed to be who I am. Like, I think those younger years of myself, I just didn't, like, it just was, like, confusing. You know what I mean?
Because
I feel a certain way. I think these things, but I'm not allowed to say them. And if I do say them, it's, like, shocking or, you know, polarizing. But, you know, I grew up in a family, like, they weren't, like, super, like, you know, I just gave that example of, like, I circled boys and they're like, oh, actually you circle the girls. But it wasn't like, when I talk about feeling shame, it was shame I kind of felt just naturally when you realize like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like doing this. My family wasn't like, oh, like it wasn't like I was getting in trouble or I was being punished for being a certain way. It's, you know, actually thinking back to my younger years specifically, my parents embraced my flamboyance. I've always been flamboyant. I've always been feminine. And I never felt shame about that within my family unit. It wasn't until like junior high and high school and having to deal with other kids where I started feeling any amount of shame for that. I would like dress up and like my sisters and I would play like, you know, dress up and I would be like making gowns out of my mom's quilts and afghans and all this stuff. And never I made to feel shame for that. Until, you know, I got older. So it was just an interesting thing knowing how I felt about certain things and knowing that it wasn't the norm, but also being so young, you don't know how to articulate that. Mm-hmm. Being young, confusing, you know, it's such a time to like gather information and it's so informative. And when you're in a situation where certain things aren't supported, whether you're saying it out loud or not, it's just interesting.
Yeah. So how does that play into your music career? Because as you grew, you're starting to kind of recognize, wait, this isn't okay. And then you start navigating what you want to do for your living or what you want to do for a living. And you're like moving into adult life. And I'm imagining you start following this path of this music career. So how are those things tying together?
Well, you know, when I moved to Nashville, I was 17 years old and I, you know, I was playing anywhere and everywhere. I was doing writer's rounds left and right, you know, the whole thing. And I was getting attention because I think just because, you know, I think people recognized that I was talented and I had a gift when it came to like writing songs. But the conversation about my sexuality was always just at the forefront. And it was so annoying because it's like, I could be sitting up there with like four other dudes who are like mediocrely talented, could kind of sing. And, you know, they'd go on to get a publishing deal or they'd go on to get a record deal or stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I'm still at the Commodore Lounge singing with, you know, the same people, just kind of trying to figure out why I wasn't getting the same opportunities. And then I realized that this town was not super supportive of queer people. And I came out when I was, I guess I was 20. So living in Nashville. And I realized that my sexuality was just nothing but an obstacle. And, I kind of took a year off. I worked at Forever 21 and I was at work is where I got called fancy because it was the first time I was around other queer people. And so when I came out of the closet, I started working at Forever 21 and I jokingly say I didn't come out of the closet. I burst out of it because suddenly was like surrounded by all these amazing queer people who were so supportive. And it's just this other life from this like conservative Christian world that I was so used to. And I dyed my hair platinum blonde. I started painting my fingernails. I wore like full beat makeup every single day, probably for like 7 years. And I'm like, kidding. And at work is where I started getting called fancy. And so I took a year off from, you know, just even trying in Nashville. And I just kind of did my own thing and started going by fancy full time. And it was like such a polarizing time in my social life because I, you know, all these people who like knew me from like going to Tribeca and like, you know, living in this conservative bubble, all of a sudden we're like so polarized by me not only coming out, but like changing completely.
Yeah.
Was when I went to Tribeca and who I was in this moment was so polarizing. So I decided a year later I was going to do my first show as Fancy and it ended up selling out. It was like a smaller venue, but I had never done a show where it had sold out. And it kind of just showed me that like, wow, me being my like full self here in town as Fancy, becoming Fancy eliminated the question of, is he gay? Like, what's the deal? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm gay. It's in your face. It's it's not the most polarizing thing at my show if you're coming to see it, you know? So it just kind of like changed the game for me. And my queerness has always been such a huge staple in my art because I've spent so much time not getting to express myself fully. And you know, when I came out of the closet, I kind of made a deal with myself that I was never going to do that again, you know? Yeah. And then ups and downs, roller coasters, record deals, all this stuff, people speaking into your art. It's just been a turbulent, bumpy ride, but it's been an interesting one nonetheless.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at BabyBrezza.com.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a one-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.
Okay, well, let's tell the listeners about the part of your story that you're referencing, because Chip and I know, but like, it's so fascinating to hear you say that at that point, like you came out, then you started to really just lean into this fancy version of yourself. And you were like, I'm not going to abandon myself again. Like, I'm not going to do it. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. And then you got a big record deal and were really like, you had a viral hit. With
Goodbye. Well, I mean, yeah, I was thinking about it today. I was like, did Fancy invent going viral? Like,
I know, really? he went viral before viral.
Before people viral. Even like, because now it's like, it's people think that's a marketing plan. Oh, make a viral video. And it's like, right. It's not that fucking easy. But like, I was living in Los Angeles the first time I heard of you. I was working with a band called Five Knives. And there's a guy in there named Nathan Barlow, who we all know. Mm-hmm. And
love Nathan Barlow.
And he was like, Chip, you have got to hear this guy from Nashville. And even for me being in LA, like I couldn't believe that this was coming from Nashville. You know, I was like, wait, that's happening in Nashville. But at the time, you were going by Who Is Fancy, not just Fancy. So I'm curious if that was a question like that you wanted the audience to ask, or if that was like that was born out of you being like, wait a minute. I'm figuring out who I am. Who is Fancy? Like, what was the like emphasis on the who is part?
Well, it's all a bit of a tricky story. There's
we love those.
Yeah. It's all glamorous when you look at it on paper. You know, I was working with all the biggest names, and I went from working at Forever 21 to all of a sudden I had, you know, the publishing deal of my dreams, to working with producers that I never dreamed I would meet, let alone work for and work with. And it was just, constant, you know, back to people telling me what I could and couldn't do. And there's one thing that motivates me more than anything else, and it's someone telling me I can't.
Mm-hmm. Same.
A very big producer who I was writing with, and I was like playing him some of the stuff that I was creating for myself, for my artistry. And I remember him just looking at me like dead in the eye and being like, "You really think you're going to be able to be an artist?" And I was like, I don't just think that. I am an artist. Like, that is, I mean, there's, like, what are you talking about? Like, it was so puzzling to me. And he's like, yeah, you're more of a behind the scenes kind of person. Like, I think you're going to have lots of hits. Like, you're a really talented writer, but you're definitely not going to be an artist. Like this song would be great for, you know, and he listed like 10 other artists, you know, but because I was, you know, not only just queer and flamboyant, I was wearing full face makeup, but I'm also like, you know, large and in charge. And so there's just so many things that people saw as an obstacle to me being relevant and famous and people recognizing me as an artist. And I thought when I got my big record deal and my man deal out of spite from that producer telling me I couldn't, I thought that all of that was going to change, and it did not. I ended up in this situation where I don't think anyone woke up, the people working for me, I don't think anyone woke up and was like, you know what? We want to damage this dude. We want to mess up his life and make him feel bad about himself. I don't think this was like a conscious effort to like shame me or make me feel a certain way. But inevitably, Los Angeles just chewed me up and spit me out. I signed this big deal. I get moved to LA part time. And then all of a sudden, you know, the conversation turns to, well, you need to be in a gym. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to make this whole campaign got pitched to me about putting my song out, my song Goodbye, putting it out, having this like everything about being about not what you look like and not all this stuff. And all of a sudden I realized like, wow, my song's out and it's climbing the chart, all this stuff. And I'm not a part of the brand at all. And actually the first time I ever heard the song on the radio was the first time I was informed that I was being called Who Is Fancy. That wasn't a decision I made. That was those. And I think the whole thing was for other people to ask who is fancy.
Right.
But I think inevitably when you take someone out of their own branding and then pose a question, I think what that ends up doing is making that artist look like they don't know who they are. Like you kind of implied is like the second part of that question. And no matter what I did after that with the label, with my management, we just could not get on the same page because that question was so palpable. Who is fancy? And my voice didn't matter. And no one else could really speak to this artist because they didn't create it. I did. This fancy thing I created to set myself free from this conservative Christian world that I lived in Nashville. And then after that, this like country music row world where people were trying to make me play by their rules. And I realized like, wow, I'm not in that Christian bubble anymore. I'm not in that music row bubble anymore. I'm in this Los Angeles music business bubble now. And it's people doing the same exact thing that people have been doing to me my whole adult life as a queer person, telling me who I am and what I am. And in fact, I didn't even get to perform live. I got to be on Jimmy Fallon, The Tonight Show, which is, you know, a major achievement and a huge bucket list moment for an artist, especially that being my first time on television. And finding out that the only reason I was able to do it is because I'd been in the gym every single day while my song was climbing the chart. And all of a sudden I looked a certain way. You know what I mean? Suddenly I was presentable. Suddenly the label was like, oh, well, maybe he's a star. Like, you know, because I wasn't fat anymore. And it was just kind of a devastating time. All of these bucket list things were happening to me. I had a top 40 hit on pop radio a year after one of the world's biggest producers told me I'd never be an artist. And then all of a sudden I was just in these moments of just like, I'm not surrounded by the right people. These people don't support my art. Like, I think there were some well-intentioned people around, but inevitably everyone just works for the man. So it's like, you're kind of just not protected. And the whole reason you have managers is to feel protected and to feel like your brand and your art is being protected, you know, from the powers that be. And I kind of spit up and shoot out and I was in and out of my record deal in a year and a half, which is a miracle. A lot of people get shelved and stuck in situations. At the end of the day, everyone handled the situation with kindness. You know, horrible things happen, but at the end of the day, I was let out of all contracts. It's like it never happened. But I walked away saying I had a top 40 hit. I toured the country with Ariana Grande. I have a song with Ariana Grande, a viral hit. It's like some pretty badass things happened, but it was traumatizing the whole time because I just felt like I wasn't allowed to be myself and I was having to be something that other people wanted me to be. And a lot of decisions were made out of fear, because we got to remember, me being an openly gay pop star that wanted to sing about boys, I refused to not be myself. And despite everyone doing their best to make me, you know, tone it down or, you know, be more palatable I was told all the time, but I was still singing about boys because that's what I know. I'm not going to try to be like ambiguous, not at this point in my life. So, you know, my song Boys Like You was kind of my last hurrah with the label. And, it already got streamed more than my top 40 hit by the time I got dropped. But there's just not much to say. But it was a time where, you know, gay marriage wasn't even.
I know.
Yeah. It's so crazy to me because it's not like you walked in and said, hey, you're going to manage me and you're going to put out my records. Like, these people chose to work with you and to not, you know, support you for you. It just sounds absurd. It's like they just wanted to waste their own time for a year and a half.
I think, like I said, I think there was some well-intentioned people. And I think as things start moving I don't think anyone thought that Goodbye was truly going to catch the way it caught, you know, I think it was January when they first sent it to the first radio station, and it was already a top 40 hit by April. So it's not like it spent all this time. I did not do one radio tour. It just kind of really
took on a life of its own.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this like big, which happens a lot to a lot of artists, you know, this big grand mansion was built without a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So grand opportunities that, you know, seemingly would launch someone into the stratosphere. But there was no foundation. There was nothing for me to really hold on to. There was nothing really for the listeners to hold on to. And I think people, you know, I think the industry wants to, you know, they constantly are talking about dumbing things down for the audience. But I think the audience is a lot smarter than the industry wants to give them credit for. And I think they know when something's authentic and when something's not authentic. And unfortunately for me, I was presenting myself on these large platforms, not fully feeling great about myself. And I think I pick up on that.
I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, Chip manages L King, and we talk, and I've seen you open for L King. And she, to me, is one of those people who just fucking is who she is, like across the board. And, I think people pick up on that, and it's just like why people love her. And I love watching people like that really grow and succeed, because to me, like you said, the foundation is there and they know who they are and they just own it, and people get it that way. But when we try to like contort ourselves and fit into a box, a lot of times it just gets lost and people get confused. And if they don't have the thing to grip onto of like, no, this is who that person is, they can't buy in either.
Right. Well, and something I love about L King that I got to know about her on this tour.
Yeah.
L King is going to be L King.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter if it is me, you, or Elton John in the room, be herself. And that's why she has been so successful in so many different iterations of her career. And it was inspiring for me to be around someone like that, because you know what? I think because of the way I grew up and because of the all the voices who have told me to be less, like, the lid on it, be less, be palatable. Like, you don't want people to be offended. I think something I learned is that that's not me. You know what I mean? Like, that's not who I am. So done are the days of me listening to anyone, whether it is a big wig producer, whether it is a big shop manager, whether it's a label president, whether it's another artist, whether it's someone at a grocery store, whether it's a fan commenting on my Instagram, gone are the days where I listen to anyone about who Fancy is, because this is the world I created, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've really been able to, in the last couple of years, orchestrate this really beautiful landscape around me of the people I work with, of the people who get to speak into my creative process, the people who get to speak into my career, the people who get to speak into my personal life are really vetted and trusted, and people that rarely criticize and always uplift. You know, I realized that, you know, people always talk about yes people. You don't want to be around people, but you don't want to be around no people either. And there's a lot of people in this world. There's a lot of people in this industry that are no people for the sake of, I think, their own insecurity, their own fear. They can't imagine themselves living to their fullest potential. So why would they ever support someone else living to their grandest moment? And when you think about who's speaking into your life, the critics, you know, whether they be people you don't know or people who are working closely, you got to really ask yourself, is this someone who I would switch places with? And if the answer is no, then what they're saying to you doesn't matter. Realize that there's a lot of people in this career I've had speaking into it that I would not trade places with. Not for the most money in the world would I want to be in their position, because what they don't have is true happiness. And you can see that as people, you know, exist and around you. You can see when someone's truly happy. And you would never treat someone the way I got treated in Los Angeles if you were happy, or if you were trying happiness. If you're trying to create money and greed and all of that stuff, that's not going to find you happiness. And I am in a place now in my life where being myself and creating art that makes me happy and speaks to me, and I think people in my community, that makes me the happiest. I don't care if a radio station wants to play my song or not. I don't care if a big manager thinks my song's a hit, because I know that there's people out there listening. This is the first time last year I put out my album, and it's my debut album. I've been in this game since I was 17 years old, and I put out my debut album last year in 2021. I've lived in Nashville since 2009.
Damn. Wow.
My only body of work came out in, 2021 after a pretty gnarly year.
Yeah.
With pandemics, I was hit by a tornado here in Nashville.
Oh yeah. You lost your house, right?
Yeah, my apartment. I did.
Oh, damn.
The photos are insane.
I've never seen them.
Oh,
wild. But you know what? It's like, with the lowest of lows come some of the highest of highs. And I found myself again, actually rising from the ashes and getting to having the opportunity to put my first full body of work out into this world. And not for nothing, I own it. So
yeah,
despite, you can look at the Who Is Fancy Spotify page, and I have over 100 million spins, but ultimately that was not beneficial to me in my life. And, I don't have the same amount of streams, with what I'm doing now, but I feel fulfilled and I feel so happy. And I feel like all these opportunities that are finding me now are finding me at a moment of peace and me at a moment, I feel like I'm arriving, you know what I mean? And not just in my career, but in my life. I have a thing I do, and this started probably in like 2018. I don't make New Year's resolutions, but I set a theme for my year, and it's really
that too.
It's really crazy how just knowing what I want to happen in a year and just focusing on that and truly believing that that's what I deserve and seeing myself reaching that goal, it happens full stop. And so it's just been cool because people have always made me feel like I couldn't do things without them, specifically in my career. And this is the, you mentioned me going back on tour with El King, and this is the year where I've done everything that I was doing in 2015, and I'm doing it again. And this time I'm doing it on my own terms, and I'm doing it my way. And this is art that no one has really spoken into except for me. So, and trusted collaborators. So it's been a really fulfilling moment. And, my story sounds dramatic. It sounds crazy, but all of that to say, it was a huge learning curve. And I learned a lot about what I don't want and what I don't need. And what I don't need is people who don't understand me speaking into my art and my life.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a one-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.
The reminder to... As you're talking, like, have you guys ever heard that analogy of like life is just a corkscrew? Like, we all want it to be, this uphill climb, right? Like, something happens, you learn a lesson, and then from then on out, it's just all the way up. And really, it's like life is this up and down, you know, just journey of different obstacles. And a lot of times, we even get the same lesson presented to us. And it's like, okay, well, am I going to make a different decision this time? Or am I actually going to lean into my truth more and hold on to it? And I hear so much of that in you. It's like you kept bumping up against this thing of like, who is Fancy? You know, like through your whole life, you've kind of had this same narrative following you. And it's really inviting you to lean so much more hardcore into like, I know who I am and I'm going to tell you who I am. And I think that the fulfillment that I see you talking about right now has to be a product of that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the whole thing about people, the whole thing about the who is Fancy thing. And, you know, I remember how nauseating for me those label meetings were, because, you know, it would be like, well, you need to be the male Meghan Trainor. You need to make a Motown record. You need to make this kind of record. You need to make that record. And, you know, I would run and... I would do it all. I would do whatever they said. And at the end of the day, it was never enough. And so, you know, I just realized, like, you know what? I do know who I am, but who I am does not fit into these people's version of what they want me to be for people. And that's no longer something I do. I don't live for other people's comfort. Like, you don't like what I'm doing on Instagram, unfollow. You don't like what I'm doing at my shows, don't come. You know what I mean? It's like, there's just all these different things. I used to live for other people's comfort. I used to want to be what other people wanted me to be. And I think you're right. I think, you know, I was rubbing against that. It's a theme in my life of constantly, you know, feel like I have to prove myself. And I think I have proven myself. I've come out of all of those really dramatic stories unscathed, you know, and
better.
I agree.
Yeah, you know, Kelly Clarkson was not lying. What doesn't kill you definitely makes you stronger.
She always speaks the truth.
Yeah. Well, the last album was called Southern Curiosity. I loved it. I think it's so great. I listened to that song Don't Blink just on repeat. For some reason, that one really speaks to me and I just could blast it in my car all the time. I love it. Tell us a little bit about that album and making that album and what that process was like for you.
It was a long time coming, that album. We took a very long time to make it. I moved back to Nashville from LA. I always kind of had a place in Nashville. I was always kind of going back and forth. But I moved back full time in 2016. And I got out of the last contract that I was in with all my previous stuff. I had to wait out. So I basically took a year off in Nashville. So I went from being on Jimmy Fallon and touring with Ariana Grande and all this stuff to moving back to Nashville and working at a bar. And which is humbling to say the least. Mm-hmm. And I took a year off waiting to get out of my last contract. And I got out of thinking, I was a little big for my britches, thinking, well, I'm going to get another deal just like that. And it took me about a year and a half to get another deal. So it was like entering into 2018 when I finally got a new publishing deal with my now manager, Natalie Osborne, and her longtime collaborator, Steve Markland, who's an amazing person. But what had happened is like those years where I couldn't get a deal and I was just kind of existing in Nashville, I became very close to Steve Markland. And obviously Natalie's, y'all's listeners don't know this, but she's my platonic life partner. She's my best friend. And she was, you know, working at this publishing company. And I finally feel like they started like, you know, we'll help you get in rights. We'll help you do this. And then one day I was at their publishing company after having lunch with Natalie, and Steve's like, well, what do you need? Like, I want to help you. Like, what do you need? And I was just like, enough. I need a publishing deal. Like, sign me. Like, I don't need anything other than cold, hard cash, time, and, you know, space. Mm-hmm. And lucky me, I got it. They gave me that tenfold and I started being able to travel that same year. You know, I told you about my themes for the year.
Yeah.
That I wanted to travel. So it was the year of travel. And I spent money on one trip to Ireland. And after that, I got to go to 9 new countries that year. And I didn't pay for one of them.
Damn.
That's amazing.
I want to set that intention next year.
Were they all songwriter? Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it was like all song. Like people wanted me to come somewhere and write or somewhere to perform, you know. And it was just kind of a crazy year of just like opportunities to get to see the world. And I think going to London was really a catalyst for me as an artist, because genre has always been such a tricky thing for me, because mm-hmm. in Nashville I always felt too queer to truly belong here. And in LA I felt too Nashville to belong there. And so it's always just been such a clusterfuck for me. And then when I was in London, genre was not a conversation whatsoever, mainly because country music isn't a largely known thing there. So I actually wrote Don't Blink in London with a pop producer who was like, oh, I've always wanted to try to write a country song. And what he played me was this like electric guitar riff with this trap beat underneath it, basically.
Yeah.
And I wrote it in about 10 minutes over.
Oh my God.
Now. And I remember being back stateside and we were like listening to some of the songs I had written. And I feel like it was the first song that all of us, Natalie, Steve, myself, were listening to. And we were like, you know what? This is a vibe. It's mm-hmm. a sound vibe. And like, it's, you know, it's fresh. Is it country? I don't know. Is it pop? I don't know. But it's fancy. And that's what it felt like. It felt like I had really stepped into my sound for the first time. The record after that, you know, I was writing with so many people in Nashville and in London. I wrote half that record in London. But it just kind of fell together. And then John Green, who's a dear friend, and Topher Brown, who's a dear friend, I've known both of them for a better part of a decade. And we actually did a demo together that actually never even made the record, which is funny. But I loved the way they made it sound. And so I was like, can y'all come in and produce some songs on me? And I convinced Steve to pay for like the first 4, and we were like calling it an EP. And then in the studio, I ended up recording like 9 songs. And then I just kept somehow talking people into letting me record more and more and more. Every time John Green was in Nashville, me, him, and Topher would get together at Battle Tapes in East Nashville. And I think we recorded like 20 songs for Southern Curiosity and then finally cut it down to 11.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just a beautiful process, and it was the most fulfilling creatively I'd ever felt at that point. And I just felt so in charge and so present in my own art and my own brand. And that record's something I'm really proud of, because in a lot of ways, for me, it's a big fuck you to Los Angeles and a big fuck you to Nashville, because I'm going to be whatever I want to be, whenever I want to be it. Fancy is not just one thing. I'm a lot of things. I'm born and raised in the South, and I'm unapologetically proud to be queer. And I never want to hide any of those facts about myself. And I think that's something that I was asked to do multiple times in this lifetime so far. And I'm just, you know, like I've said multiple times, I'm done doing that. I'm done apologizing for being who and what I am. And I feel mm-hmm. like he is my love letter to myself and my love letter to being queer in the South. And the most beautiful part about it, I get emotional talking about this, is all the messages that I get from people who finally see themselves in music, because our narrative is not often explored, you know, especially in Nashville mm-hmm. and kind of storytelling. And I feel like Southern Curiosity was, for me, a way for me to tell my story. But the most impactful thing for me has been hearing other people share their stories with me and tell me that that album was the first time they were able to see themselves in a space, in a place that doesn't often celebrate them. And yeah. So it's kind of a bridge of sorts. And I just really feel so blessed to have been able to be a part of that and to, you know, be challenging the norm here in Nashville, challenging what stories get told and who's getting to tell them.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that is so beautiful to me, because I really felt listening to this album, like what I get from it is just the rawness of your emotions in general, whether it's heartbreak or it's just like deep love, if it's accepting yourself, like I felt all of that, which then translates into me feeling that for myself, you know, and giving myself the graces of just like, you're this way, accept it. Like, stop trying to not be who you are to fit into someone else's box. And also, it helps that you can fucking sing your ass off. And it's just beautiful to listen to you all day. So I'm just a huge fan of it. And I just love that you are embracing who you are, because I think that that's a gift to all of us as well.
Well, I also love that, like, even in the production, the rawness, like it's night and day from Who Is Fancy. And it's like the makeup came off, the cloak was removed, and you fucking just laid your heart out on a record. And it's, you know, that to me is the clearest path to happiness, is mm-hmm. just like you allowed yourself to love yourself. And as much as you wanted people to hear this record, you clearly needed to make this for you. And that's, I think, where the most pure art comes from.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was also the first time, you know, I've been talking about being surrounded by the right people. It's the first
right.
time I felt so nurtured to 100% be myself. And there was, I didn't have no people around me. And not that the people around me were yes people, but I firsthand got to see what it's like when you're nurtured as a creator, as a creative, as an artist. When people just allow you the space and the time to be yourself, what can come of that? And I think it's really beautiful that, you know, I found the people in a town that seemingly was not filled with people like that. I'm really thankful that I found the group of people that allowed me to do that. And that has morphed into this whole other thing. You know, I was signed to Downtown. That's not even a thing in Nashville anymore. And now those publishers are my managers. So we've kind of taken on this whole thing, because I think it's when you find the people that ride for you, you got to stick with them. And I finally feel like I have the people that ride for me. They don't ride for one song. It's not that they're riding because I have a hit song. It's not because, you know, there's this big artist taking me on tour. They ride for me, and I see mm-hmm. it in my life, and I see it in my career as well. So I think that's the most special thing for me that came of the whole Southern Curiosity thing, is just finding my tribe, finding my people, mm-hmm. the people who nurture me and allow me to be myself in my, you know, creative space.
Yeah.
Who knew that would be freaking hard?
What did you say?
And who knew that'd be so freaking hard to find?
I think it's one of the hardest things, though, is finding and embracing the people who can truly support you and be with you on your journey, and then make you, like, not make you, but allow you to be yourself so that you can stay there. You know, like, I think it's probably something we're all going to bump up against. And the older I get, the more important. I love that you've been putting it into, like, having yes people, but I mean, and not having no people around you. I've never thought about it that way, but that is, it's so destructive for a creative. Because then you get squashed and you get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And before you know it, you're questioning everything you do, which is literally the most contradictory thing to being able to really embrace your creativity.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you have people just sitting there, you know, with their arrows ready to shoot every dream and idea you're throwing out, it got me to a point where I didn't want to throw anything out.
Exactly.
I didn't care about saying anything at all. And then it turns into, well, you don't know yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, great. Perfect. I'm glad.
Oh, we're like, I did before this conversation.
I'm glad we're here now. Glad, yeah. I'm so glad we've landed here.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing.
It should be criminal for liars to work in the arts because look, there are plenty of jobs out there that are people's dream jobs, but when it comes to art, that is your dream. You know, like, it's not a dream job. It is, you are living your dream. And, you know, I'm sure there were plenty of days that you were like, and maybe even still, like, you look back and you're like, how did I get there? Well, people were lying to you. They were saying what they wanted you to hear so that they could get from you what they wanted. And it wasn't your dream. They wanted money. They wanted power. They wanted all of these things. And I'm sure there were some well-intentioned people there that did want to see you succeed. Yeah. But it might not have been for your dream, though. And it sounds like the people around you now, and of course, I don't know Steve, but I of course know Natalie, and it's like they're along, like, they share your dream, right. So it's they're coming from a much more pure place, and well, I mean, it's so beautiful, like, you know, as a manager myself, it's like I know none of this is easy, you know, it's like I have to believe the dream too. I'm going to fail. You know, like, I have to wake up and believe the same fucking dream.
Well, I also think that I have realized in the last couple of years working with Nat and working with Steve is, like, also, I believe in them just as much as they believe in me. You need to trust people that you believe in and that you see their potential and you see, like, where the, you know, when it's able to, like, suddenly there's joy. You know, meetings. I used to loathe the word meeting. Like, let's have a meeting. Let's jump on a call. I'd be like, oh God, no, thank you. I'm going to run off Runyon Canyon before I go to another. You know what I mean? But it's just like, now it's like, I find so much joy in the brainstorming, in the group think, you know, of like, what are we doing next? Because it does feel like a we. It doesn't feel like me working for other people, which is what my career has always felt. Me answering to some heterosexual white dude telling me how to be fancy.
Right.
And I finally feel like I'm at the helm of my own ship, and everyone always says you have to be, but how many people allow you to be is really interesting, because the answer is not that many. And when you have people that allow you to finally feel like they're working with you and not you're working for them, it fosters a really peaceful, joyful environment. So not to say that, you know, we win all the time, that every day is a win. That's not true. There's many times where, you know, we're all bummed out, but we're in it together, you know, and that makes the sting of, you know, the not great days not feel as bad, because I know that I have this team around me that believes in the overall bigger picture.
Right.
So in my career earlier, I had all this success, a top 40 hit, big tours, all this stuff under my belt. But when the storm came, the house crumbled completely.
Hey,
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.
Well, the current single is Blue Dream Baby with Kacey Musgraves. I also love this song. Tell the listeners about recording this with Kacey.
So I'm working on my sophomore album, and Blue Dream Baby, I actually wrote with Karen Fairchild from Little Big Town.
I also love Karen.
And Elisa Vanderheim, who is producing some more stuff for my album. And it's one of those songs that, you know, I've been so in the world of Southern Curiosity. When we wrote it, I was kind of like, I don't know. And then, you know, after that first day listen, Elisa sent it to me again and was like, this is bonkers. And I listened to it with like a fresh ear and I was like, you know what this reminds me of? It kind of reminds me of something I would have written back in 2015. Like, it's an earworm. It's like, I just think it's such pop yumminess. And I'm kind of in the mood to get back to that because that's where I started. That's where my career started. So this next album is a little bit of a, I feel like genesis, because I'm kind of returning back to what made me popular in the first place, which is pop music. And Kacey and I are dear friends. She's one of my good Judies here in town. We've been like friendly for years and years and years, but I would say we got really close after a trip we took with some friends to Cuba. And in Cuba, there's like no phones and like all this stuff, so you end up just having to like get to know people.
You talk.
Yeah. So we just became very close after that trip. And then obviously going into the pandemic, we were in the same little bubble. Cell group. The same bubble. And she's my closest friends, and getting to collaborate with her is a dream, but it kind of came together. I played it for her boyfriend, Cole. And I got a text later that night from Kacey, and she's like, Cole just told me about this song. Like, will you send it to me? And then next thing you know, we're in the studio. She's putting vocals down on it, singing harmonies. And then she did, you know, the harmony for the second verse ended up sounding so cool. We made it like the main part of it. So it's just been a dream collab. And again, it's just a moment for me to, you know, the music video for that is so outrageous and wild. And I'm having like wild galactic alien galien sex and
galien
everywhere, and just like very much. But it's just a testament to, I have a team around me that when I throw out a vision, it doesn't matter what it is, like they're there to see it through. And like, I when I was saying that idea for the music video, like I get abducted by galiens, and then, you know, the alien gets hard and this penis like that comes across the screen and all this stuff, I'm thinking like, I'm about to get like laughed at or told, like someone somewhere is going to say no. And it never happened. Like, it literally never, like, yeah, that's so funny. This is great. Like, just do this. I was just kind of like, wow, I know that I'm in the right place for this, because I just feel like my visions are finally getting to come to life and people are getting to know me for the first time for real. So, and having someone like Kacey on the track, you know, it's a dream come true. But again, that's another, you know, my last giant feature, I'd say. I've had a ton of features that I've enjoyed being on, but I remember the song with Ariana Grande and Meghan Trainor, you know, that team of people making me feel like I could never pull something like that off without them. And I feel like me putting out a song with Kacey is just another homage to 2015 and all the people who told me what I couldn't do here I am doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the album needs to be called like, "This is Fancy Bitch."
Yeah.
Like,
you know, I know people don't like to talk about stuff like this, but I've thought about that. I've thought about what this album should be called. And I think, like you said earlier, Southern Curiosity was such a, here's my heart. Mm-hmm. Do will. But I think this album with its pop leaning sounds is kind of like my genesis. So I've thought about calling it that. And I've also thought about just calling it Fancy.
Yeah.
And I haven't decided yet, but you're spot on with that, because I don't think there is really any more questions about who I am. I've kind of like laid it out on the table, but if anyone is still wondering, I would love to spell that out for them clear, because I'm not that, and I never have been. And I'm just kind of excited to have the opportunity to continue living my dream.
Yeah. If you had to say anything to people listening who, you know, either, I mean, whether it's in a creative field or not, but just in life in general, like, what is your biggest takeaway lesson from your whole experience with this corkscrew of like, who am I? No, this is who I am. And then people questioning it. And like, what is the biggest takeaway that you could give the listeners?
I think listening to yourself is really important. And I think a lot of people, myself included, in the past, do a lot of listening to others.
Mm.
And decisions based off other people's feelings. And I think we have to do a better job at truly listening to our gut, because my mom always said to me, you got to trust your gut because it's the only thing that won't lie to you. And I've really, the last couple of years, have been feeling that. And I was listening to some week, I was reading a book that was talking about true emotions, and fear is a real emotion. And so I think sometimes we make decisions out of fear, but when fear turns to panic, that's not a real emotion. That's, you know, panic. It's just such a negative thing. And I feel like a lot of decisions in my life and my career have been made out of fear and panic. And I just think we got to make decisions out of joy and out of love. And I would say to someone, if you're not making decisions for yourself in any regard, your career, your life, personal life, if it's not bringing you joy, if you're not making these decisions from a place of love, then it's not the right thing.
Mm.
That's amazing. It's so true.
It is so true. Fancy, thank you for being here with us and sharing your story with our listeners. I love the journey you're on, and I'm so excited to just see how the rest of this plays out. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Fancy Haygood, and anywhere you listen to music.
Anywhere you listen to music. I'll put links to Fancy's Instagram and this album in the description of this podcast. And I'm just so glad that you were here with us. And Chip, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to give?
No, I just can't wait to see you in person soon.
Yes, let's hang. Let's get together.
Yes, let's do it.
Thank you, Fancy. And thank you guys for listening. Bye.
Bye.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified? Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.